When it comes to educating our children, how much emphasis is placed on training them to become good citizens and responsible participants in the democratic process? It's a subject that's going to get some attention this afternoon in a program at UMSL titled, What Kind of Citizen? Educating Our Children for the Common Good. That's also the title of a book authored by the featured speaker, Dr. Joel Westheimer. He's a former New York City school teacher and is currently University Research Chair in Democracy and Education at the University of Ottawa. Dr. Westheimer, thanks so much for being with us. Good to have you in the studio.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, I guess the big question is, how can schools be better used to nurture our young children, become better citizens?
Well, one of the big problems with schools right now is this kind of cultural obsession we have with standardized testing. Mm-hmm. And it's testing only in two subjects, right? Math and literacy. Yeah. And, you know, your listeners will be so tired of hearing about this, just math, it tests in math and literacy. That obsession with only those two subject areas has meant that things that have always traditionally been important in public schooling in the United States and elsewhere have been pushed off the table. And one of those things, the biggest one, has been the idea of educating the whole child and educating what it means to be a good citizen in a democratic society.
We're going through that in Missouri right now with regard to Common Core and abandoning that and establishing different kinds of standards. But I'm not so sure that what we're reading indicates they're going to get away very much from the basic Common Core standards.
Yeah, and Common Core, to be clear, you know, is an improvement at least in the content over what came before. Yeah. You know, we had No Child Left Behind, which I've often called No Child Left Thinking. some teachers call it No Child Left Untested. I've even heard people refer to it as No Child Left. But the problem with Common Core is not so much, it's an improved content, but it still has the same link to testing at the exclusion of things that are important in schools.
Which would be the humanities, I guess, for a start.
Well, so exactly. So first of all, we have things like history, science, gym, recess, you know, social studies, all pushed off the table. But second of all, the idea, the freedom that teachers had to explore teaching in a broader sense and allowing children to teach things like critical thinking, like critical analysis of ideas, looking at social policies, these kinds of things have been pushed out of schools as well. You know, we have this saying, you know, politics in our culture now is this dirty word, especially in this current season. Like if I say, oh, Don, you're just being political, it's like I've insulted you, you know, like you're a mudslinging candidate running for office. But politics really has a more noble meaning. And in that, you know, in Bernard Crick, in his famous book In Defense of Politics, said politics is the way we come together in a democratic society to work out our differences and move forward. And when we see the kind of gridlock we have in Congress, the kind of dirty politics we have playing out on the stage, when you think what's important for a democratic society, you'd think that one thing that is important for public schools to teach is how to critically analyze the world around us, how to deal with different ideas, and that's not being done enough in schools. So when we say, you know, would like to keep politics out of the school, I often say we should bring it back in.
This is really a wonderful teaching moment, as incredible as this political season has been. I mean, it gives the potential for just looking at it from so many different angles.
Absolutely. And this should be a time where teachers have the freedom and the space to explore not just national issues, but local issues with their students. Unfortunately, for so many teachers, their hands are tied because they're having to spend endless weeks and months and hours on nothing but preparation for these standardized tests. And so go ahead. I saw you wanted to.
Well, it just seems to me that their hands are tied by other things, too, the political correctness issue being one of them, the fear of school boards and the fear of parents who will, you're teaching my kid about politics. I don't want him to, you know, to be exposed to Donald Trump or to Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, that's right. And there's a really big problem there, I think, because when we think about what differentiates schools in a democratic society, right? In other words, how should our schools in St. Louis, for example, be different from schools in Iraq or in Indonesia or in China? Is there any way that schools in the U.S. in general should be different than schools in a totalitarian dictatorship? Think about it for a second, right? Schools in all countries around the world want kids to know how to do fractions and add numbers. Mm-hmm. There's no country in the world that doesn't want its citizens to learn how to read and write, and even to follow rules and, you know, obey the law and pay taxes and all of those things. But schools in a democratic society have a different mission, or an additional mission, and that is to teach kids about controversy, about controversial ideas. Because in a democratic society, it's not the king or the military junta or the dictator who says what's going to happen in the country. It's the people themselves. So we need students to be exposed to multiple perspectives, to the controversies and so forth. So when parents or others say, you know, well, I don't want my kids exposed to those kinds of controversial ideas, in some ways, the answer in a democratic society is that's too bad. That's what public schooling is in the United States of America.
But, you know, we see it, and I want to ask at what age we start all of this, but in line with what you're saying just now, you know, we see it on college campuses, and you probably do too, where there are occasions where students will get up and say, I don't want to be taught this because it's contrary to some belief or another.
Yeah, and we could, of course, have a whole show about trigger warnings. And,
exactly.
That's right. I mean, you know, there's within those that notion of trigger warning, there's a kernel of something that's interesting to pay attention to, which is that we need to be aware of the way different types of information affect different people, with especially those with traumatic experiences. That said, I think that, it's a big mistake to shy away from those conversations or even to protect people from those conversations. When we think that politicians can't learn how to discuss different ideas together, you know, we wonder, well, how, you know, have they been prepared to do that? And schools are a good place to prepare that. So multiple perspectives, controversial ideas, these are the things that make up a good education in a democratic society. And that's why I think when we talk about you know, I titled the book What Kind of Citizen, right? And I did that not because I'm really, you know, fascinated by civics education, which would put everyone to sleep. I mean, when we think of civics education, we think back to the kind of classes you and I had on, you know, how many members of Congress are there, all the rules. This is deathly boring. What's really interesting about talking about what makes a good citizen is teaching about the competing ideas and the controversies and battles that have played out through history. That's what makes education so interesting.
And if you're going to hone critical thinking skills, you've got to hear at least two sides and maybe more.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, here we are in this we often hear about 21st century learning, right? And and that has something to do with the information society. And weirdly, in this information society where we all, you know, carry around phones in our pockets that can get us facts at any moment that we want, we have a situation where we have tons of facts, and yet the education system is still focused on cramming down more and more facts down people's throat. We don't have a problem with a lack of information. We have too much information. And so what we need to be teaching kids is where that information comes from, how they can sort through that information, what the different ideas about power and rights are behind different forms of information. And we have the opportunity to let kids explore exactly like you said, not only two, but five, six, seven, 10 perspectives on almost every issue.
But it seems to me that we are moving farther away from that rather than toward the objective that you're talking about. I mean, with each passing year, it seems we're pulling back from that.
I think that we have been in the last 10 years of school reform, and that's because of, as I've stated, this obsession with standardizing the curriculum. Yeah. You know, there's nothing wrong with standards, by the way. I've never met a teacher who doesn't have standards. And all teachers feel accountable. They're accountable to their kids, to the parents, to the school administrators, and so forth. The problem isn't with standards. The problem is with standardization, which by definition means making everything the same. And when we try and make schools like McDonald's, where you go in and you want everything to be exactly the same as in any other McDonald's, you lose the richness of the educational process itself, because education is about human relationships and about the immediate and local environment in addition to the broader issues. Nobody says that kids don't have to learn the basics. Of course they do, but most teachers want to teach a lot more than that, and that's why we want to give teachers the freedom to explore those topics.
We run the risk, though, of creating a generation or generations of robots, automatons, who think exactly the same way because there is no variety in what they're being exposed to.
That's exactly right, which is why, you know, not only do we need to teach critical thinking because we want to avoid the automatons, the robots, but also because that's what makes teaching and learning so interesting, right? That's where it is really some of the best examples of education we see are when the controversies are brought into classrooms.
I've noted here that in the address you're going to have this afternoon, I'll have more information on that in a moment. What kind of a citizen? Educating our children for the common good is the title of this speech. Who determines what the common good is?
Well, that's a terrific, that's the million-dollar question, right? But what I'm trying to draw attention to, and of course there should be disputes about what is the common good.
Sure.
I mean, is it, should we raise taxes for the common good or lower taxes for the common good, right? There's disputes about that. But I'm more interested in the idea that let's think about the common good in the first place, and that's not being done enough in schools. And what the common good means is let's think about the kinds of teaching and learning in classrooms that aren't just for career advancement, for individual career training, for kind of selfish, individually based things. Those are important too, but let's think about what kind of education we need to make our society better. And whatever better means to you is certainly something that has to be discussed and should be discussed, but let's at least agree that schools have a role in improving society. And that's why educating for the common good is, I think, an important way of phrasing it and way of starting.
And a classroom discussion trying to define what the common good is could be a pretty good discussion.
That's exactly right. and there's no one more interested in those kinds of issues than kids. And you know, even schools themselves are an example of a kind of mini society where they can talk about the common good.
Where do you start this process with the kids? At what age?
So I don't think that there's any age that's too early. Of course, certain kinds of discussions are appropriate for you know, kids at different levels of development. You're not going to talk about or show pictures of the Armenian genocide to 4-year-olds. On the other hand, issues of fairness, issues of justice, issues of how we organize our lives, how we organize our society, these are things that are of concern to the youngest of children. In fact, any parents listening will think, you know, if I say, what is one of the mantras of childhood, right, that all of us parents have to endure? Kids say, it's not fair, right? Everything's not fair. Well, it's not fair is an entree into a conversation about how we organize society. Well, what is fair, right? Should we distribute resources equally? Should we make opportunities available for all? Should we link them? These are all questions about what the common good is. And you can have those conversations with a 5-year-old, a 6-year-old, and a 7-year-old.
And you can have a conversation as long as you never ask a 5-year-old a question that can be answered yes or no.
That's right. You know, that's always good parenting advice.
It really is, because otherwise that's what they're going to say.
Yeah. You know what one of the greatest questions parents can – one of the greatest things parents or teachers can say to kids, young kids, old kids, everything is, you know, somebody wrote the textbook. Right. That's a really interesting thing to tell them, because they say, what do you mean? Because most people think the textbook was, you know, sort of came down from a mountaintop on 2 stone tablets and and is just the truth. Right. But as soon as you say someone wrote it, it raises the question, well, who wrote it? Who is this? You know, and why did they choose these stories to tell and not other stories? And those are a kind of thing that starts good conversations with kids.
We do a lot of work here on media literacy, and we've got an active organization in town working very diligently with young people today to do exactly that with regard to interpreting what media is telling them or trying to sell them or what have you.
That's right. Those are very good programs.
I think so. Let's take a call or two as time allows. We'll start with a gentleman who is a member of the elected school board here in St. Louis. We have a couple of different methods of administrating our schools. His name is Bill Haas. Bill, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Well, thanks for your great shows always, Don. I apologize if there's an echo in the phone. I have a little volume issue with my
phone. You're fine.
A comment and a question. I'm supportive of what you say. They need to read and add and write also, of course. But the key is curricula. If you don't have good curricula for what you're talking about, it won't be done very well. And I hope we're doing some of it in our St. Louis schools. And I'd be interested if you have some experience with us along those lines. And my question is, as part of your presentation and your ideas, whether you include teaching kids about LGBT issues of identity and orientation and respect for differences in others. I've been on the board over 19 years now, And I started whining about this issue in my first meeting, and we still have bullying in our high schools of kids who don't understand these issues. And my last point is, you may have seen the 60 Minutes piece a couple weeks ago of a All-American breaststroker who was on scholarship from Harvard to Harvard just about the time she realized as a senior in high school that she was a he, and dealing with those issues. So it's important to present these issues, I think, to children young, both for their sake and for those around them to help understand. And I was wondering if your presentation addresses that issue.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah, thanks, Bill, for those comments. Really interesting points. And so, first of all, on the issue of curriculum, I think you're right that curriculum is very important. And as you said, I mean, there's, you know, nobody thinks that kids don't need to learn the basics. No one's arguing against teaching math and literacy. But a broader curriculum that allows teachers to explore current issues of concern is really important. And there is plenty of curriculum out there that does that. And also, I think it's very important that teachers be given the freedom within guidelines from the curriculum to explore issues that they are passionate about and that their kids' experiences and passions bring to the table. Which brings us, of course, to your specific example. So one example of that is could be LGBT issues, and it's a nice one because, Don, as you said, some parents might object to that.
Oh, for sure.
And some parents might be supportive of it. And, of course, you know, the big worry is some form of indoctrination. Mm-hmm. But, of course, you know, schools are all about imparting values, right? And I think in this regard, the critical point is the discussion itself. It's that, yes, these issues should be raised, LGBT issues and other issues as well. Notions of tolerance and acceptance, of course, are important. But we also should entrust kids to embrace the debates around these issues and to look at the topics from all the different sides, look at the implications for our society. And there's not a classroom in the country, and certainly not in St. Louis, that shouldn't be dealing with those issues in various ways.
But before you can do that, before the teacher can do that, he or she is going to want to know that the principal of the school is behind this, that the school board is behind it, and that the parents aren't going to be all over him or her.
Yeah, you know, there's places I've studied schools all across the country and some around the world and in Canada where I'm living right now, and there are teachers everywhere who do the hard work of discussing controversial issues with kids, preparing them for democratic participation, and a lot of those teachers do it in spite of the school structures around them. In other words, they're not supported in those tasks. But the places where it's most effective and done with the greatest impact is, of course, places where principals will stand behind them and school boards will defend teachers' right and need to explore controversial issues with kids.
I've got to have the feeling, though, that this is going to work better in some parts of the country than in other parts of the country. And not to demean the South, but I think that certain subjects are not going to work very well down there, and teachers aren't going to go for it.
Well, I think not only do we need this kind of public education in public school classrooms, but we need a broader conversation, which is why it's so good you and I are having this mm-hmm. conversation now, because the broader public needs to understand that schools in a democratic society are tasked with teaching children to deal with multiple perspectives. They are not tasked to reproduce the values from home. Certainly kids can do that in church, in their synagogues, but in public schools, nobody's telling them what to think or how to think, but people, they do need to be exposed to different perspectives because that's what a democratic society requires.
I'm going to bring in one more caller here, and Jeremy, we're going to have to take your call, but please make it quick. Time's a-wasting.
Basically, I was just wondering at what point will we begin to actually start to listen to the experts? We have experts all over the country and the world telling us what works best for our children. Just recently, the head of the main doctor, head of the National Association of Doctors, said that kids are starting school too early, that we should be starting later. I've heard other countries say that kids shouldn't even have homework until they're 7 years old. We spend all our money and time to get these experts to do stuff, but then we never listen to them or implement to find what really works for them.
Thanks, Jeremy.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, of course, there's not expert agreement on all issues, but you just named two of them, and there are many where there is widespread agreement. There is a lot of evidence, for example, that homework does absolutely nothing for learning, especially in the younger years, and probably not until high school. And yet, we continue to assign homework because we don't look at the research, we don't see it, or we have other reasons for assigning the homework that we think it's some kind of form of punishment. And so there is a lot of value to looking at the education research out there. Education is a very complicated field, and there's not always clear consensus, but we should be looking at that research as much as possible.
Why is it that we stack up fairly negatively against other countries of the world? Many of them we would not imagine that we would be behind, but we are. You're teaching in Canada now. How is that different? Is it a better system?
Yeah, in some ways, Canada has some of the problems that the U.S. has, especially this focus on standardization and testing in math and literacy only. On the other hand, we have fewer high-stakes testing. And, the United States loves to hold up Finland, for example, as the kind of, top country because they perform so highly on international comparison tests. What's interesting about that is that Finland does everything pretty much the exact opposite of everything we do here in the U.S. They have teaching is a highly respected profession. All teachers are unionized. They're highly paid. The working conditions are very good. And as we all know, teachers' working conditions are students' learning conditions. And they have no standardized tests whatsoever. A lot of the flexibility is given to the teachers. And we like to hold up Finland as an example and then do the exact opposite. So I think that we would do better if we copied some of those things from Finland and Canada and elsewhere. The interesting thing is they got those ideas from us. It's just that we've moved away from that.
Interesting tweet we have here, and there's no time really to comment on it other than to say that Sarah writes that we are better at raising consumers than citizens.
I think
you'll agree with
right.
her.
That's right.
All right. Dr. Westheimer, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Let me tell folks that the UMSL Center for Character and Citizenship presents Dr. Joel Westheimer talking about what kind of citizen educating our children for the common good this afternoon, 3 o'clock at the Millennium Center, Student Center at the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Thank you for being with us. Fascinating.
Thanks so much, Don.
Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. Programs and production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.